A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Sunday, 14th of March 2021. So we will continue on where we stop. We are following this, our first transcript book, the green color transcript book, with the title, Who Are You and What Are You? We are at page 31, 4-31. So today's topic, I think, will be more interesting. We are coming to the end of this transcript sharing. We will go through the balance of the session that we need to develop understanding, especially the five heavy karma and the three supporting condition for the arising of our form and mind, the five aggregates of form and mind. Then why did the Buddha say this five aggregate of form and mind is not real? Because it is subject to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. It is condition behind its arising. So these are called phenomena, condition arising phenomena. That's why it's not real. It's impermanent. You attach and cling, it leads to suffering. And because it's not real, it is called anatta. Anatta in the sense that it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. Therefore, it is not us or you or me. Yeah, this is not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I. So we need to have fundamental understanding of this to break free from the sakyadity of self-delusion. And we need to understand who we are, what we are. That's how we all develop this understanding through this sharing. And from there, you will know how to cultivate. Without this understanding of who you are and what you are and how you arise, you cannot cultivate. Then we link it to the two nature within each and every living being. Each and every one of us, we have a karmic nature. Then we have a spiritual nature. And their uniqueness, we have to understand them. Then also, we have two minds. The mundane mind, which is dependent, originating, conditioned, arising, cause of phenomena, connected to the five aggregate of form and mind. That one is subject to karma. That one we need to understand. We need to know how to use it and yet not be deceived by it. So this is a very important understanding, the summary. But when it comes to cultivation, we have to use the true mind. We cannot use the mundane mind. Yes, the mundane mind is limited by its instrument. The truth or the Dhamma that we are going to realize is beyond thought, beyond mind. So our instrument is the mundane mind, which is the thinking process or the thought. Then that instrument limits you. How can you realize something that is beyond thought, beyond mind, when your instrument you start or use to meditate is thought itself? When there is thought, there is no sati, no mindfulness, no heedfulness. So this understanding is very important. So hopefully with all this, we can finalize the sharing today. Then after this today's session, you all would have understood many important aspect of the Buddha's teaching that can enable you to understand life, live life, and cultivate correctly. The five types of heavy karma. Like I explained before the beginning of the class, we are coming towards the end of our this transcript book. So we have covered the initial understanding of who we are, what we are. Then we have some form of understanding of the two types of mind that living being has. Then we also have the understanding of the two types of nature that we have. Then the essential Dhamma of the Buddha, starting with right view with regards to the law of karma. That's how the whole teaching come about. Then now we are left only with two more things to develop understanding. We have to be aware of these five types of heavy karma. This is a very serious karmic thing. Whoever commit this five heavy karma, you cannot escape. You will have to bear the effect sooner or later, because these are very heavy karma. Sometimes it's instantaneous. That life itself, something will happen and you will take effect. Sometimes it may delay and take effect much later. So it depends on the causes and conditions and many other things which are related, because law of karma is just one of the nature's law or spiritual law. There are others. The physical law of nature, Uttuniyama, Vijaniyama, they also influence life and existence. Then there is this law of mind. Of course, law of mind has its own law, Paticca Samuppada, the dwelling. But it has mental intention behind, which is also linked to the law of karma. Then we have the law of truth. Law of mind is Citta Niyama. Law of truth is Dhamma Niyama. That's why the essential Dhamma are all nature's truth that the Buddha taught us. So all this, when we understand, we will know how to deal with life. Then the last understanding that you need is, what are the three causes and conditions that support the arising of the human life or the living being's life? So this is where the five aggregate of form and mind come in. And for the five aggregate to arise, for a living being to arise, you need three supporting conditions. So all this, you need to develop understanding. When you have the understanding, then you can develop the ability to live life, to move, to cultivate, to do whatever that you need to do for your nature to grow, to progress. Yeah. So all this understanding, they will fall into place. Okay, so now we will start. I will go back to that subheading 4.3.11. Five types of heavy karma. So if you want to understand who are you, what are you, you have to understand how you come. Means how you come into this existential world. This form of mind which the Buddha mentioned is born of your karma. Well, this is a spelling mistake. Born of your karma. Add to your karma. Conditions supported by your karma. So this is the mundane form of mind. The mundane form of mind is karmically conditioned out for you to use. So you must not deludedly grasp and cling onto it. Otherwise, you will suffer. You will become afflicted. So this part is very important. So this form of mind is the vehicle and tool for us, all living beings, including us as human beings, to come to this existential world. The form is the vehicle, the mind is the tool that we need to cultivate, to understand this form and mind, so that we have the wisdom to understand who are we, what are we. If the five aggregate of form and mind are not us, then who are we? What are we? That's how we investigate and develop the wisdom. So the first part we have covered. So now we are coming to the second part. That's the reason why within the mundane condition arising world, there is this law of karma which recognizes relationship. Do remember that. This one is most important. Don't be deluded by the understanding that is one-sided. So when you are deluded by your lopsided understanding, you may gullibly go and say, since it's all anicchang dukkhang anatta, he know you, he know me, then you don't have to take care. Then you can do what you like. No, if you do that, you are being deluded and you will get into trouble. Because when you don't care and you do what you like, thinking that you never kill anybody because it's anatta, non-self, there is no such thing. Because when you live within the conditioned world, the nature's law of karma, law of karma or karma niyama takes over. And this law recognizes relationship. And this is you. Because it recognizes relationship, you must bear in mind that there is coming implication. Because even though it's anatta, but there is such a thing as a form of mind that has a life. There is such a thing as your parents, your children, and your loved ones. You can love them, care for them, provide for them, but don't deludedly attach and cling on to them or grasp on to them. Attachment is the cause of suffering. So what the Buddha wants you to develop as understanding is to understand that all these are conditions arising from a mind. Individuals or living beings, including human beings. They are only condition arising from a mind. So don't attach and don't cling so that you don't suffer. But as a living being, you have a duty to perform so that this karmic nature can evolve. This is a very important understanding. That's why there are these five types of heavy karma which the Buddha talks about or explains clearly. Can you all remember what are they? Ah, very good. The first two is patricide and matricide, involving killing of a father and a mother. So this one, it recognizes relationship. If you kill your father and your mother, it is very heavy karma. It constitutes very heavy karma. That's why law of karma recognizes relationship. So you don't simply go and say, because the Buddha said everything is anatta, non-self, he know you, he know me, not real, not what you think. Then you go and assume, therefore I didn't kill anybody. This is just a form of mind only, not me. And my parents also not them. If you deludedly go and do all these things with this wrong understanding, then you will be in serious trouble. Where there is such a thing as the law of karma that recognizes relationship. Just like a live wire. A live wire never say, hey, you virtuous one, you touch, I won't electrocute you. there is no such thing. Because these are nature's law, and you just have to obey the law. Do you understand? If you are not protected, not insulated, even electrocute you, no matter how virtuous you may be. That's why you must know that these are nature's law that governs life and existence, and they do recognize relationship. Then the third one, what is the third one? Oh yes, killing of an arahant. Then what is the fourth one? Fourth one is hurting a Sammasambuddha. Then the last one is Sikhism, causing disorder to the Sangha community. So all these five heavy karma imply that the law of karma recognizes relationship. So you must not play a fool with karma. You must take it seriously. Do you understand? There is such a thing as good friends, loved ones, and your children. You also have a duty and responsibility towards them. The same goes with fellow living beings, humanity, nature, including all living things that have life. The plants, they are living things. Also, so other form and mind hidden existence, they also have life. That's why you need to be sensitive towards them. You need to have love, compassion, and kindness. And that sensitivity to them through Dhamma understanding. Then together with mindfulness to be aware and to feel for them. Then your mind will become very different. Then when you are connected, you will come to realize that your true mind is not a being, not a person inside. There is no such thing as a being or a person inside, because that one is just a nature, our true nature. That's why karma is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why I say it's just not really called a... I have to read this again. That's why karma is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why I say it's not really called a storehouse of consciousness or a laya consciousness. Or soul. So there is a lot of this concept about the soul that we human beings or all living beings, when we die, the soul transmigrate and take over another body. Then there is also some religion that don't believe there is rebirth. They only believe in one life. And the soul, upon death, either goes to eternal hell or eternal heaven, the kingdom of God. So that is their belief. But for us Buddhists, we base on what we understand through the meditative understanding, through our nature within. All this involves investigation. Very scientific, so that we don't deludedly believe or assume. We look at life, we study life, we go and develop investigation to find out what is the truth, so that we are not deceived or deluded by all the so-called belief system or dogma that the world has created. So this aspect is very important. Then there is also a Mahayana concept that believe there is a storehouse of consciousness or alaya consciousness. So they believe that there is something like the soul that store all your consciousness. That's why they call it a storehouse. But in truth, it's not what they think it is. But this concept of storehouse of consciousness come from one particular branch of Mahayana. Because they need to explain things. They call it the alaya consciousness or storehouse consciousness. But in actual fact, according to the Buddha, he said there is only a karmic nature. Karmic nature that record all this karmic imprint means every moment of thought process. They will accumulate and become that karmic nature. So it's the summation of all the moment to moment of thought process that the being creates since the beginning of the first thought or ignorance until now. So that karmic nature is just a nature. It's not a being. It's not an entity. It's not a soul. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. It's an evolving nature, part of nature. That's why it's called our karmic nature. So this part we need to understand. For it doesn't belong to you. It is just a karmic nature. All of your accumulated happenings form that nature, just like the great nature of this universe. The existential, we call it nature. Then there are nature's law that governs nature. Or life and existence. So in a similar way, there is a more specific, smaller entity called karmic nature. Then there is another entity which is the opposite of karmic nature. We call it the spiritual nature. So all these are governed by nature's law. Then the conditioned world is the totality of nature. All of the law of nature that governs all of life within nature are like the secret of life that can explain clearly what this universe is all about. So this sentence you have to really pay attention. All of the law of nature that governs all of life within nature are like the secret of life that can explain clearly what this universe is all about. So when we want to live life, we have to understand the secret of life. If you don't understand the secret of life, you cannot live life. So what are the secret of life? They are just law of nature that governs life and existence. No more than that. So the Buddha in his teaching has taught us, he said there are five nature's law that governs life and existence. Two of them are scientific law, which he defined as Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. Uttu Niyama is nature's physical law. All physical things obey this law. That's why you have law of physics, chemistry, and all the technical law. Then Bija Niyama is the other missing half of the physical law. The scientific law. Bija involves organic things. This one is called the organic law of nature. All organic things, they obey this law. That's why there is a field called biology, genetic engineering, psychology, and all those things. They are all related to what we call organic things, biological things, like plants, animals, human beings, living beings, they all And this, they call it the organic form. Or sometimes we call it physical form, because this organic form has physical appearances. So the four elements, solidity, fluidity, motion, and even heat, they are within the four elements. So all this form that has life has organic content, biological content, genetic content. So this one, they obey this law called Bija Niyama, the organic law of nature. So physical law of nature, organic law of nature. Then after that, the Buddha explained there are three other spiritual laws that governs the rest of the universe. They are spiritual law that involve first the law of karma, karma niyama. Then there are mind, law of mind that decide or condition how the mind function. They call it the law of mind. So law of karma is karma niyama. Law of mind is Chitta Niyama. Niyama is also called the great law or order of nature. Then the last one is Dhamma Niyama, which is nature's truth. All of the teachings, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach, these are called Dhamma. So Dhamma Niyama, nature's truth. These three spiritual law complements the two scientific law to become the five nature's order that governs all of life and existence. So when you understand these five law, you become like somebody who understand life, who had the wisdom to understand life and live life. So the Buddha is a perfect, fully enlightened Sammasambuddha who has perfected the understanding of these five laws, especially the three spiritual laws. That's why, as far as spiritual things are concerned, he is the foremost. He has the nine great virtues. That's why we chant salutation to the Buddha. Iti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho. And continue. So this understanding is very important. Whereas the scientists, they have penetrated the first two scientific law, physical law of nature, and the biological order of nature, or organic law, biological order of nature. When they have good understanding of this law, when they have breakthrough, they progress very fast. And you can witness this from our civilization. Over the past 40 to 50 years, we progress so fast because we actually have a lot of breakthrough and understanding within the scientific field. The first two scientific nature's law, physical law of nature and biological order of nature. So these two are very important. That's why scientists, they can come up with such understanding and make tremendous progress. So if we look at civilization, as a civilization, even our own human civilization, the recorded history is only 5,000 years. But even up to the last 50 years, we are still very backward. Only the last 40 to 50 years, we progress, we really progress. And the progress is so fast. Why? Because we managed to truly penetrate these two scientific law, physical law and biological order of nature, which is science and technology. That's why we have evolved through over the past century or so. First, we have the issue of not having enough food. So not having enough food lead us to develop understanding to solve that problem. So we have the first revolution, they call it the agricultural revolution. We will manage to produce enough food for more and more people. That's how the world population increased. Then with more and more population, we realize another problem. We cannot provide enough job for people. So the scientists, the human mind, again come up with understanding. Then they started the second most important evolution of industrial revolution. So after agricultural revolution and industrial revolution, we progress. Then after that, we need data. We need to process things faster. So we evolve again through basic, very crude mathematical models. Then later on, with the advent of we call logbook, then slide rules. Then later on, we have simple calculators. Then now we have computers. Then comes the most important revolution, technological revolution. So technological revolution bring forth great transformation. Then this technological revolution, the greatest marvel is of course we have witnessed the internet. Then after the internet is the artificial intelligence, AI. Then data and speed. We have 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, now we have 5G. And we will continue to evolve. And we will become very sophisticated in years to come. That's why when we progress along the scientific law of nature, when we have more breakthrough and understanding, we really progress. So similarly, when we go into the spiritual practice and cultivation, the great beings, the Bodhisattva, the Sammasambuddha, they also penetrated very deep. So spiritually, they also have great understanding. That's why they can come up with all those great teachings. Especially some of the great Mahayana teaching that share with us the understanding of the cultivation of the Bodhisattva way, leading to the perfection of all perfection paramitas to realize Sammasambuddha. So all this, they are there, is for us to develop the understanding, the progress, to catch up with all these things. And as far as my nature is concerned, there must be a balance. If you progress along the scientific understanding, if technological scientific understanding progress too fast, then human being will lose balance. It will lose its ability to balance the understanding where they lack spiritual understanding, which can cause a lot of problem and backfire. That's why as scientists progress, they realize they develop a lot more problem. Last time before agricultural revolution, there was no such thing as chemical pesticide and all those things. Then before we have industrial revolution, there was no such thing as atmospheric pollution and all those things. Emission of effluents and destruction of nature. Then later on with the technological revolution, the pollution become worse. Then our resources of nature has been like taxed to the extreme. We find it very difficult to survive. Everything is like being depleted very fast, and it causes imbalance in nature. That's why now we evolve another understanding to help recycle a lot of nature's things. Our resources we need to recycle. then we need to harness green energy, solar and all this thing, so that we don't create more stress on our limited planet's resources. Then we also have this environmental impact study, climatic change and all those things. So we are looking into all this as we progress and as all these things surface. So spiritual understanding also has the same effect. When you don't have the spiritual understanding to balance your life, then you will get into trouble. It's just like when you progress along the agricultural revolution, industrial revolution, technological revolution, and so on, then the side effect of lack of understanding will surface. Then without the spiritual law, understanding the karmic will cause the human consciousness to go down. Then he will develop a very strong collective consciousness that is very, very negative, that imbalance. That's how it conditioned pandemic, it conditioned war, it conditioned conflict, misunderstanding. So the world couldn't progress evenly and amicably or beautifully. It's because we lack understanding. So everything we try to do to create the solution for our problem, because we lack complete understanding of the nature's law, not only scientific law, it involves spiritual law, then the imbalance takes place, like what I explained just now. Agriculture revolution bring forth chemical pollution, related pollution and problem, especially insecticide, pesticide and all these things. The industrial revolution involves a lot of what they call toxic waste being emitted and discharged into the environment. Then also it causes a lot of pollution, especially when we come out with the technology to develop cars, aeroplane, vehicle, then we burn a lot of fossil fuel. So we bring about global warming, then climatic changes and all those things. All this need solution, need mitigation measure. That's why engineer has to learn to progress along. Like when we have too much human being, we have public health problem. So public health engineering comes. Then we need to cause environmental friendly type of understanding to bring forth solution to our sewage problem, to our human, what they call, discharge problem. Where we discharge a lot of very toxic thing into nature. So if you don't take care of the sewage or the pollutant that we discharge or the effluents, then we will have problem. Our planet will have problem. Our environment will have problem. Our air quality, water quality, everything will suffer. So spiritual understanding is needed to balance all this, apart from technical understanding. That's why we have environmental impact study, then mitigation measure solution. All this involve cause. And the world has to see the importance, and every country work towards it, contribute towards it, so that we will have a better world, better society. So all these are very important understanding. So what I am driving at is, when you have all this understanding, you will progress in a more balanced way. Then our civilization will be beautiful, exceptional. Okay, we go back to our sharing. So the Panchaniyama, the five natures order that governs life and existence I have gone through. Yeah? So Uttu Niyama, with nature's law, we have the physical law of Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. So Uttu is physical law, Bija is biological order. And the spiritual law of karma, mind, and Dhamma or truth, law of truth. And all these laws, you need to understand them. That is both mundane and the supramundane aspect. So the spiritual law, when you develop the penetrative understanding, you can understand the spiritual aspect, which is the supramundane aspect. Whereas the mundane aspect covers the basic scientific law and mundane mind activity and law, so that you can understand life. So understanding the mundane and the supramundane aspect of life and the Pancha Niyama will enable you to understand life. So this is like the secret of life. When you know the secret of life, you know how to live life and you know how to take care of your life, especially your karmic nature, your spiritual nature. So the supramundane is linked to the spiritual nature. Supramundane means beyond the mundane condition arising world. Whereas those within the existential world is termed the mundane existence, which is closely linked to our karmic nature. So you need to understand both the mundane and the supramundane world, the law that governs the mundane and the supramundane, both the conditioned and the unconditioned. The supramundane is within the spiritual realm, which is beyond the conditioned world. Now that you know the secret of life, you have understood who are you and what are you. Once you don't deludedly grasp onto the form and mind anymore, you will make full use of this understanding to work your way up karmically and spiritually. So after you have understood who are you, what are you, the secret of life and the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us, then you will not be deceived by the phenomenal world. You will not be deceived by your form and mind. That's why you will not deludedly grasp and cling onto your form and mind. So when you do that, you can break free. You can break free. So this understanding is very important. Yeah? So you must make full use of this form and mind to cultivate. I will read the whole sentence so that you understand. Once you are no longer deluded, you will not grasp onto your form and mind anymore. Then you will know how to make full use of this understanding to work your way up karmically and spiritually. Now that you have this understanding of the mundane and the supramundane, you must make full use of this form and mind to cultivate. That's why the Buddha advised the monk to strive on with heedfulness. And do not be heedless anymore, because you cannot guarantee how long you live. Do you understand? Life is very uncertain, but death is certain. Also because this form of mind is very fragile, very delicate, and very vulnerable. Easily gone or die when the condition supporting it is no more. Also, one must understand that the mundane and supramundane are governed by different set of nature's law. Within the supramundane understanding, there is the understanding of he no you and he no me. But within the mundane conditioned world, there is this law of karma that recognizes relationship. And there is such a thing, such as you and me, loved ones, etc. That's the reason why the Heart Sutra states that true emptiness is wonderful existence. What does it mean? It means when you penetrate the supramundane to realize true emptiness, then existence becomes wonderful and very meaningful. So this is living life. When you have the spiritual understanding, you will have the good life, because you will come to realize clearly the secret of life. Then you know how to live. Then life becomes wonderful and meaningful. Then there is no more suffering, misery, delusion, attachment, clinging, grasping. All this fade away or cease because you have developed spiritual wisdom. So all these are very important. Now we go on to the next part, which is also very important, the three supporting conditions for form and mind's existence. Means all living beings, including human beings, there are three conditions that support our arising. That's why it's called a condition arising form and mind, the five aggregates. What are the three conditions that support this form and mind's existence so that it can continue to function as a human being, as if it's real? The first condition is this physical form, which is the physical body, it must be functional. And then there must be this consciousness or mundane mind, which is karmically trapped inside his physical body, which came from the rebirth consciousness when we arise. Then it evolves and becomes a complex consciousness. These two conditions alone is not enough. You need a third one. What is the third one or the third condition? Yes, the karmic force is the third condition. So this karmic nature introduces the karmic force in the form of supportive karma that supports and sustains the existence of this form and mind. So you will have this consciousness. So you have this consciousness, this physical body, together with the karmic force. So this karmic force, sometimes we call it the life force that supported our life. All three must be there as supportive condition for this form and mind to continue to exist. If the karmic force is no more, what does it mean? Destructive karma has arisen. This destructive karma can cause the heartbeat to stop because the life force no more. Then there is no more karmic force or life force to pump the heart. Then they say, you die. Then when this happens, consciousness has to separate from the form and mind. Then when the consciousness separate, the form and mind disperse because the supporting condition is no more. Then according to human term, we say you die. So this is the understanding. But sometimes karmic force may still be there. But let's say you have an accident, then your spinal cord break or snap. Then the physical body cannot allow the consciousness to continue to exist within, where it cannot sustain it anymore. So again, with only the consciousness and karmic force, the form and mind also cannot exist because the physical body is no longer functional. Hence, consciousness has to leave the body. So this is the understanding. Just like Kapa Singh case. I think there was a time he had an accident. Because that one, the incident is very sudden and very tragic. Then this consciousness, which is the random consciousness that has accumulated inside the physical body over the years, will have to leave the body. This consciousness will come out. But before it come out, the last thought moment, which is Chuti Chitta, and you also call it the last thought moment that conditioned the rebirth consciousness has already gone by, then this rebirth consciousness is born of his karma, heir to his karma, conditioned, supported by his karma, and all the DNA coding and characteristic will be as determined by the law of karma. So that's why each and every one of us, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned, supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So karma is very important. We must take care of our karma to build up our karmic nature so that every life we come, we will have a good form and mind. Do you understand? It's like in our present world, you have accumulated a lot of good merits. It's equivalent to like you have put in a lot of hard work to accumulate a lot of materialistic wealth and money, property. Then what happened? Let's say you have a car that is already very old, or an old junk that you want to change to a new car. You can sell it and buy a new car because you have the money. Do you understand? You can buy a better car if you have sufficient money, isn't it? A better car that suits you better, that performs better. Otherwise, otherwise what will happen? If let's say your karmic nature is very weak and it's like you don't have much money and you can't even afford an old junk. So what you can afford to have is just a Volkswagen, not Volkswagen, a Volkswagen is you can only walk. Do you know what is a Volkswagen? Not the car Volkswagen, but only a walking body with no car. Do you understand? That's how you suffer. But if you have good karmic nature, it's like this line, you did very well and you are very successful. Then whatever nice new car, this new form of mind you want to have when you are reborn, you can have. You can have it. Then you can see that the performance of this nice car is so different from the old junk or the Volkswagen. When you sit in the car and drive it around, you can feel that it is very safe and it performs very well. With the new form of mind and your wealth and money, you can use it to help others and be a blessing to many. But if you don't have money and don't have the means, then you can't even afford a proper car. Then you have to walk, take public transport, etc. Then accumulate slowly and maybe buy a motorbike first. Then later on, when you become more successful, you buy your own car, you buy your own house. So law of karma is like this. If you develop the perfection of this karmic nature, then when you come, this form of mind will be beautiful because all the conditions will be there. And because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned, supported by it, and you are what you are because of it, that's why everything goes your way and everything you need will be like provided for. So this is a very important understanding. And the conditions are like you are always very blessed or very lucky. So now that you know who you are, what you are, and how you come, the only essential thing left for you to do is what? Yes, very good. Strive on with heedfulness to transform these two natures of yours. Do you understand? These two natures are your karmic nature and your spiritual nature. If you don't have the spiritual understanding, you will not have any idea of what you are. That's why you don't know how to live life. They don't know how to cultivate. Oh, sorry, I read again. When you don't have any idea of who you are and what you are, then he used the word they. When they don't have any idea of who they are and what they are, then they will not know how to live life because they lack this spiritual understanding. then they also will not understand cultivation because they are deluded. They have scarcity. But you all are more lucky or very lucky because you have the Dhamma and you have the teachings clearly explained to you all. Then you can focus on your cultivation. If you do just that, you will evolve and progress very fast and beautifully. Initially, forget about enlightenment first. Don't be too eager to progress. This way, you can progress very much faster. My advice is, you just take care of karma and then cultivate sincerely, diligently with faith to develop your spiritual nature. And I can assure you that you will continue to evolve beautifully. Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So we end the first session. Then we have session two, which is Q&A. So this part also very important. So Q&A session. Then there's a question by Sister Mimi. As cultivator of the way, some would like to take the Arahantship way, which is faster, and some will prefer to go the Bodhisattva way, which is much longer. So I'm actually quite keen to know about their pros and cons. I hope you can enlighten us further on this topic. So this is a very good question. So the question is, understanding the Arahantship way and the Bodhisattva way, or we call it the sainthood way leading to Arahantship and the Bodhisattva way. So this sister, Kayamita, wants to know the pros and cons. So I answer her. Okay, this is a very frequently asked question. Most people, as they cultivate, they actually have this question. Then for some, they will read up certain book to find out the answer themselves. I think most of us are familiar with the famous Ajahn Mun of the forest tradition. If you read his biography, you will come across one statement made by his disciple Longta Mahabhuwa, that he originally took the Bodhisattva way, that he realized it was too long, so that life he decided to end everything by going for Arahantship to finish it off. So the choice is yours to make. And there is this comment by the Mahayanis regarding the Arahantship way. Do you know what was the comment? What was their comment? But please, don't allow this to create unnecessary misunderstanding. I just want to clarify this very important point of misunderstanding. They always say the Arahant are in a certain way still quite selfish because they only seek their own self-enlightenment. You heard of this or not? It means they are more interested in their own self-enlightenment only, and it does not develop because they don't develop the vow to arise the great compassion to save all beings, all living beings. We are aspiring to become Sama Sambuddha. So they use this word, Arahants still have outflow, but Mahayanists have their reason for saying this. So please don't get them wrong. But if you use the word selfish, maybe it's not appropriate because an Arahant is already an enlightened being. Hence, there is no more selfishness in him. You must get their point right. They know it is not selfish to realize one's own enlightenment first. But the word selfish to them means a person who thinks of themselves first, hence the comment. But if you are destined to take the Bodhisattva way, you will know. Your nature will know. But you must actually develop the faith and make the aspiration long before you become Arahant. Do you understand? And that nature will know. Then when you are ready, already on the way as you cultivate. Actually, before you take the vow and make the aspiration to walk the Bodhisattva way, you already must have very deep understanding of the Dhamma, and you already know you can clear it very fast. But because of your great compassion for living beings, for the greater way, your nature will know, it will arose in your nature a very, very strong calling or determination to make that vow, to make that aspiration to go that way of the Buddha. Just like Sakyamuni Buddha, when there was a shipwreck in one of his earlier life, where he can only manage, where he can manage to only save his mother, then at that time he saw so many drown. And it was during that occasion that he made that resolve that brings forth the condition for him to become Sakyamuni Buddha later on. So everyone is different. You don't have to worry about it. According to my understanding, you just cultivate. Whatever will be. Able to realize arhantship is already very beautiful. Yeah? Don't try to aim too high when you are not there yet. But when the conditions are there, it will happen by itself, automatic. Do you understand? When you have great affinity with spiritual friends or Dhamma friends of great nature or those great beings, their nature will guide you and tell you what to do. And then you can still decide and you can still walk the way. It's not difficult. But if you are not the serious one that is determined, and you don't have the strength, the faith, and the perseverance, then this way is very difficult. Because it demands a lot of perseverance, a lot of faith, a lot of sincerity. And you must have sadha, virya, sati, and samadhi, and panya. You need to perfect them all. So for the time being, no need to think about this question. Just cultivate part by part, step by step. Then when you come to the point to decide, your nature will know. Then rejoice first. Then when security is no more, you are at least a sotapan already. Then after that, continue like King Sakka. Do you know why King Sakka wants to stay there as a sotapan? As a Sotapan, he has a maximum of 7 more lives to be reborn into the sensual realm. Otherwise, if he realizes Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, then he can only come back to the sensual world once, once returner. They call it the once returner. You heard of this? Then if you hit and become an anagami, the third stage of sainthood, you are called a non-returner. Then you don't come back to the sensual world anymore. You go to the pure abbot. Then after that, surely you will become an arahant. You cannot come back and cultivate anymore. So you don't have to worry, at least. That is also very beautiful, you know, regarding staying on as a sotapan, you only can have maximum 7 rebirths, and after that 7 rebirths are fulfilled, then you have to move on. But everyone is different. That's why if you want to do that, you might as well walk the bodhisattva way, because you can come back for aeons and aeons and aeons of birth. Do you understand? No need to be contented with 7 lives only. But a lot of people complain, wow, it takes so long, so many aeons. Sakyamuni wisdom way also take 3¾ asankhaya kapas, or 3¾ world cycle. If you take Amitabha's way based on faith, do you know how many world cycle? 12 world cycle, 3 times that of Sakyamuni Buddha. That's why he can create pure land. Do you understand? He perfected it until it can create pure land. Then those who go by virya, the spiritual zeal, if you use that perfection to cultivate, then it will take you 8 world cycles. That's why wisdom way is the fastest. You can perfect them very fast. We have 8 more minutes. Do you have any more questions? Are you clear? If you are not clear, you better ask, because this is not easy to understand. Normally, I seldom share this, because this is way beyond your normal cultivation. But these are for people who already have the condition and can understand, so that they know how to develop this cultivation, because there are some who has the condition. And then if you want to go the full Sammasambuddha's way or the Bodhisattva way, you have to cultivate this spiritual perfection until this nature completes the 10 perfection. The 10 perfection or paramitas, you must complete it. Then this one, the Buddha nature, become one with the source. The Buddha nature is all nature, the oneness nature. That's why the Sammasambuddha is a very unique being. Source means it's the source of all things. It's like perfect. If you take care of this, your karmic nature, it is enough, because this one can take you, can make you come back and live the good and beautiful life, or meaningful and wonderful life. But you need wisdom to do it. You need to connect and develop some form of wisdom to go this way. Otherwise, after you spend a long time in the deva plane, you can still fall back into the human realm. Then sometimes if you are not careful, not so fortunate, you may even go down to the four woeful state again. That's why the sixth realm, which the Mayans are called Liu Tao Lun Hui, is samsara. The sixth realm are the four woeful state realm, the human realm, and the heavenly realm, or they call it Tian Fa Qie, the 31 plane of existence. So this one we have already gone through. Anyway, I just read through it quickly. All those deva planes, the Brahma planes, the formless plane or realm, the Mahayana group them together and call them the heavenly realm or Tian Fa Qie. So they call that one heavenly realm. Then 1 + 5 = 6. So in the Mahayana tradition, the Liu Tao Lun Hui is actually similar to the 31 plane of existence as described in the Theravada tradition. This sixth realm, you will flow and move around. But when you are reborn into the heavenly realm, you tend to have better life, much better life. Even the human realm is called Kamaloka Sukhati, means sensual realm of happiness. Sukhati is happiness, the happy realm of the sensual world. But if you are born as a human and suffer, then it's not Sukhati for you. It's Kama Dukhati for you. So life is pretty straightforward. You have to decide what you want to do with your life. That's the reason why I always tell you all this. Your life, you decide. Do you understand? How do you want to live it? It is entirely up to you, because each and every one of us, we hold the key to our own life destiny. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely our choice. So choose wisely. Choose to be happy. Then the question is, why are most living beings still so unhappy? So basically, Dhamma can be understood quite easily. But the difficult part is the cultivation. That's why you have to strive on with heedfulness, cultivate your faith very strongly, and develop the other four spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. Especially sati, then you will progress very fast. Okay, any more question? If no more question, so we end. Sadhu. So there was the final rejoicing. Then we have our closing puja. So under the closing puja, we share merits, transfer merit, invoke the blessing for our nation's blessing, then you all can make your aspiration. We are the invocation of the power of words. So that's all. So finally, we finish this book. So just nice, 4:16. So after that, we can have our second session. Now, our second session is meditation. We have 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. Then we will come back for the Q&A again, reporting of meditation or Q&A or sharing of the Dhamma. So you can share about Dhamma in daily life so that we can discuss the topic. Okay, we will off the light. Then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. So as usual, relax body and mind completely. Then maintain awareness to stabilize your sati or awareness nature within. Whatever that arises, just let it be. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then silent. Silent to realize your true mind, your awareness nature within. So that this awareness nature can become stable. Once it's stabilized, it becomes your meditative mind. This is your true mind, your silent mind, your meditative mind. This one is just aware, no knowing. But it's very near, that nature is very near to the thought process. The mundane mind can just appear from that nature. When you move your sankhara, because sankhara is mental activity, creation of thought process. So you have memory, your brain. You have your views, opinion, and conditioning. So this is the one that can condition thought process or thinking. That's the reason why when you meditate, you will see this very clearly. And even Jai Krishnamurti come to realize this. What are thoughts? Thoughts are response to memory. When you respond to your memories, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your brain, that's how you create thought. So your brain is your thought organ. So see this, awaken to this, understand this. Then you will understand clearly who are you, what are you, how you function as a human being. How your mind functions, then you will understand the Buddha's teaching about the mind, the dwelling paticca-samuppada. Then you will see them clearly, all the links, avijja-paccaya-sankhara. You will understand very clearly. Then how sankhara paccaya vijnanam, then vijnanam paccaya namarupam, the five mental aggregates of form and mind. Then dependent on these mental aggregates of form and mind, there must be sense basis, otherwise it cannot arise. Then because there is sense basis, it will condition contact. So all these dwelling, they flow, and you can see them clearly. So now we open up for meditation, reporting, or Q&A.
Yeah, good evening, Ratio, and all Kalyamitas.
Ah, sadhu.
It's okay, clear, huh?
Yeah, clear, very clear, yes.
Okay.
Sadhu,
yeah, good evening, all online and offline Kalyamitas.
Yeah, sadhu.
Yeah, Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Buddhaya.
Yeah, I have a question, Ratio, but before I go to the question, I would like to make some observation based on what Ratio shared just now.
Yeah.
And based on my present understanding, it's not a could be not
no,
so
no,
yeah.
Yeah.
Just now, there was one, during the answering to Sister Mimi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said, there's a statement saying the what outflow of Arahant and selfless, selfish,
outflow,
selfish of an Arahant, right?
The Mahayana used that word, so I qualify it by saying that it's not right to use that word because I'm already without ignorance, without selfishness already.
Yes, definitely.
But the meaning they are trying to put is because according to the Mahayana, because you as a selfish person, you know what is selfishness, that we are more concerned with ourselves first. So self above others. So in that sense, they say you are a selfish person because your consideration is more towards your self-enlightenment first. But they actually use the wrong word. It's not selfish. The word they should have used is their choice. It's their choice because when you have the ability to realize arahantship, that abhijja ceases. So there is no more selfishness in that decision they make because they just want to finish off. Finish off means realize the cessation, nibbana. Then with the understanding, then they have a choice. They choose not to continue, or to them they believe this is what they have been striving for all this while, to realize this enlightenment so that they don't have to come back. So in that sense, it's not in any way selfish. Yeah, there is a personal choice. But what they mean is they can take a longer way for the benefits of all living beings. So instead of thinking about self-enlightenment, they have this understanding that they should go the further way. Well, the further way has a lot of things. That's why he said Arahants still have outflow. So maybe I explain this part first. So here, outflow means low. Here doesn't mean there is avijja, there is ignorance. Outflow is the flow of thought process. Their mundane mind is still there. So that outflow means the birth and death of the segmented form and mind means rebirth, condition for arising of rebirth consciousness to take physical birth of another segmented life of a form and mind, that one no more. The Arahant won't undergo that. But the birth and death of thought process, that one also five aggregate of form and mind. So that's why to them, because the Mahayana type of realization of Nibbana is without outflow. But actually, if they understand, the Arahant also realize that Nibbana that is without outflow. But because their mundane mind didn't collapse, when they arise from that cessation or Nibbana experience, what happened is the mundane mind has not collapsed. So there is this outflow or what we call birth and death of this mundane mind, the thought process. At that one, they cannot do anything. But because they have the wisdom connected to their former mind, so they are not deluded. So last thought moment when they die, there is no avijja to condition rebirth. So that is the actual understanding. But because of that outflow, because the sainthood way, those who go by the Arahant way, they didn't know about the Bodhisattva way. So the Bodhisattva way, when you cultivate until there is no more outflow, means the mundane mind collapse, is very different. The understanding of that nature and the cultivation become very different. Then only you can really connect to your spiritual nature, and from there you go into trance, the fourth support, to actually activate the actual transformation of the physical form and mind within. So when they do that, the vibration or the pure energy will reach the stage where it is very fine, where the mundane mind cannot sustain itself or cannot exist. That's why it has slowly have to collapse. But the process take a while. For my case, it took about 9 months after I realized that thing. I remember. So this part, maybe you should also make a note so that you can understand why the two, they cannot agree on this. And the person who cannot agree is mainly the one that is not an arahant and the one that is not a bodhisattva. So this group who are neither arahant nor bodhisattva, they tend to have issue with what is being said. So that is what I try to avoid, misunderstanding. But the reality is they have a reason to say that. Actually, when you understand, it is to me not that bad, but the wrong choice of words, like I said. Okay, English?
Yeah, excellent answer, Ratio. Yeah. Because not forgetting that our Gautama Buddha is also an arahant.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, how can they say arahant is selfish and got outflow?
Oh, outflow is correct.
The normal arahants still have outflow. But they are not talking about the asava, understand not? Outflow of defilement no more. But outflow, they mean the birth and death of the thought process, the mundane mind. That one, hayu lo, means that one still arise and pass away, arise and pass away. The mundane mind is still there. So the outflow of the mundane mind, they cannot control. They cannot control. The birth and death of the segmented life finish. But the birth and death of the five aggregate of form and mind, that one not finished. So that one, the Mayana is correct. That is the outflow. But the meaning is very different. Because to the Theravada, outflow means asava. Understand not? Asava means you still have that fine defilement and all things. But no more. Arahant no more. That's why in the last five fetters, when the arahant realizes arahant shape, the fourth stage of sainthood, even the minor conceit, mana, restless of mind, all gone. The last one is avijja, all rooted out. That's why in that sense, they do not have any more defilement or the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, no matter how fine the level is, it is no more, completely rooted out. That's why they cannot pass away with avijja, means no rebirth consciousness, is completely rooted out. So here the outflow, the meaning, again, it's the word, eh? Amy.
Because like Liu Zhu Huineng,
yeah.
Also, he knows how to use his mundane mind without deceived by the mundane mind.
It's different. That one, the Wu Zhu tell him one, because he was born without the mundane mind. You remember, Amy? Sixth was born without the mundane mind. His nature is that pure nature already. So what he is being told is that worldly mind, because just like what happened to my nature in 1989 when the mundane mind collapsed, there is another supramundane mind, which is very fine. That one will arise. That one is just pure awareness. So he must know how to use this when the mundane mind is no more. So this one is referred to as the what they call supramundane mind, that is totally without the gross mundane mind to actually cloud them. So this one is the true mind. So that true mind can have perception. can have sankhara, can have thinking, but it's very fine. It's like there is no mind. So that supramundane mind actually take over. So he used that mind, but the mundane mind is no more. So what the fifth patriarch told sixth patriarch is, because sixth patriarch don't have the mundane mind, that's why he don't understand why other human beings are like that, why he don't have that problem. Then when he told him that, he realized profoundly, he said, how amazing is it that nature is complete by itself. That's why he understand completely that nothing is apart from the nature. And all dharma of creation of the ordinary human being who still have the mundane mind, they all arise from that nature. That's why he understand. That his supramundane mind, he know how to use it. Because for him, it's different. He is the balayan. He was born without the mundane mind. So when he dialogue with the fifth patriarch, unless you have gone through that cultivation and that process, you can never understand why he answered that way after he heard what the fifth patriarch mentioned. Mm-hmm. See straight away how amazing, so beautiful. That day, I think Elsie shared the Mandarin version. I don't know whether you received the, you heard the recording or not. That day was Sunday. Chinese New Year. They come and visit us on that. No, they come and visit us after the New Year. Not recorded. Not recorded. But Elsie got it from somewhere. He read it out from the handphone. So maybe we ask her to send out that sharing. The Mandarin one is very beautiful. But it's the same as the Heart Sutta, my English translation that sharing. It's the same. The meaning is the same. So I understand what you try to bring out. Because this is very often misunderstood in the early days. Because there were a big argument over this. I think people wrote book. Then they use the same argument like what you mentioned. It is stated in the nine great virtues of the Buddha that the Buddha is also an arahant. Yes, that one is a fact. But this is not about argument. Yeah, this is about the cultivation. The cultivation, when you understand the difference between the sainthood way and the bodhisattva way, is already so wide. So different, and the amount of cultivation, experience, and understanding, and perfection of wisdom is way beyond. So because of that, you can say the Buddha is also an arahant, but he has completed the perfection. That's why he is called a Sammasambuddha. Otherwise, you are just a arahant or a Pachika Buddha, or a normal Buddha, which is not the Sammasambuddha. So there is a big difference in the cultivation. So the difference comes from the understanding. But like I say, most of the time, the argument comes from those who are neither Bodhisattva nor Arahant. That is where the problem.
The two
never argue. They know what that thing is. They know what that thing is. To the arahant, he got no more problem. Right? You tell him, oh, still got one. He say, it's your decision. It's up to you. If you want to go that way, you go. If you still believe God thing, you go. But to them, they are contented with all this. And they understand the form and mind is not them. That one, the arahant understand. So who is enlightened? No one is enlightened. Because the form and mind is just a vehicle and a tool for you to come, and you use that to realize the enlightenment. Then after that, there is he no you, he no me. There is just a nature, your nature, which is the karmic nature will condition the form of mind. then the spiritual nature is another nature that will develop the perfection of whatever wisdom or cultivation that you have developed. Then that one, you cannot inherit. It's not like the karmic nature. The moment you are born, you inherit. That's why you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditions followed by your karma, and you are what you are before your karma. But the spiritual nature, you cannot. You have to connect. You have to connect to the true mind. Before you connect, most of the time in your sainthood way, you don't inherit much. Because very likely the perfection is not much. Not much. But if you have gone beyond the sainthood way, the moment you connect to your true mind, when you realize that cessation, even the glimpse of it, after that, you start to inherit already. Then those who have that nature one, the understanding will come. They will recall their vows and all those things. Then they will know what to do. The Bodhi mind will actually manifest strongly and then bring forth the causes and conditions for them to continue with their path. That's why the Bodhisattva way is very unique. You don't have the vow, you have not planted the Bodhi mind, you can never do it and you can never understand. And the four basic vows are the condition behind the taking of that way and the path. So all this, the non-cultivator who are not on the Bodhisattva path or way, they cannot understand. They cannot understand. That's why you need all these Sammasambuddha, the great beings, and all those who have gone this way for sufficiently long training. And these are the beings who can come back to their understanding when they inherit from their spiritual nature. Then they can share with you. Then how much they can share with you depend on how far they have gone this way. But in between, they must have had teachers or guide who had actually advised them. And these are people who has gone very far, or even some of them who has finished. So when they get guidance from all these beings, they will be able to successfully walk the path. Then finally, they themselves will also get the prediction, and they will confidently after that. Normally, after you get your prediction, means they are on the fourth stage of Bodhi mind development. Means their Bodhi mind has renounced samsara. They know samsara is nothing really. So they will continue to perfect themselves. Then some bodhisattva, they choose to have the type of vow, the additional vow that hinder them from realizing the final Sammasambuddha perfection.
It's impossible to achieve.
Correct.
Impossible to realize.
It doesn't mean that when they do that, they cannot become Sammasambuddha. It doesn't mean. Actually, what it means is because they choose that way to stay. So to them, that last life as a Sammasambuddha means you will be given that prediction and that choice. But that one, if you put the vow to delay it or block it, then it will continue to delay. But if they want to realize that, they can. But it doesn't mean that when they realize that, they cannot come back. Do you understand that? Because the Theravada thought, the Buddha in his description of the enlightenment, that no more birth or anything. But what they don't understand is, he will not come back as a Sammasambuddha anymore, where that condition is finished. But his Sakyamuni's Buddha's nature is still there. And if he wants to condition a form and mind to come back, he can. But not as a Sammasambuddha anymore. But that condition is once, is only one time. Then that nature that come back is just like any of the great bodhisattva. That's why there is, in the early day, a lot of argument about whether Sammasambuddha can come back or not. If Sammasambuddha cannot come back, then they always say it's a waste. Then after that, the nature gone. No, the nature is still there. whether they want to come back or not is their choice. That's why they can choose to come. But the timing, the affinity, all depend on that. But they will not come back as another Samasamudra. And that one, the condition, no more. We are, it is very strange. Once the prediction is said, means that life, that condition, it will manifest. And it's only given once. So what I try to explain to you is, like Tisa Wang Fusa and some of the other Bodhisattva, even Xuanhua, he have this vow that if his disciple or those who take refuge under him, any one of them didn't realize Samasamudrahood, he will not actually want that type of enlightenment to become the Samasamudra. He has that vow. That's why he always tell all those who take refuge under him, please diligently cultivate and become Samasamudra. Otherwise, ni tolita, you actually slow him down. But actually, it's a joke. Yeah, he know. So he purposely take that vow, just like Tisang Wang Fusa. And they know all this to them is no more meaning because they have the perfection, they completed it, they are ready. It's just like this, the future Buddha, Maitreya, he may be in Tusita heaven and all those things, but he already has the perfection, understand not? And most of these great beings like Kuan Yin and all that, they already finished their perfection. So the timing of their last birth to become a Samasambuddha depends on them. If they choose to have that vow, if they choose to come again and again, then the individual Bodhisattva will have a choice. So they will actually evolve their own understanding. And you, as a normal cultivator, you cannot comment on. Because a lot of people say, "Ayo, this type of vow impossible one is madness." That's why a lot of people, especially Theravada, comment on what type of vow is it? The hell can never be empty of living being, which is true. So the reason for them to do it, a lot of people cannot understand because they already gone on this path until very, very far, and they know what this thing is. So to them, if they can renounce samsara, bohimai that renounce samsara, means they are near the end already. So they will surely have a prediction already. So all those things to them is a matter of choice, decision, which they themselves will know what to do. So try not to comment on all this. It will end up discussion become analysis, then analysis become reasoning, then misunderstanding. So most of the time we try to avoid all this type of thing. But for me, when I share, I just want to explain that part so that this argument or misunderstanding can be avoided. That's why I qualify it in the sharing. I say, please don't get me wrong. And don't go and quote me and create all these things. I try to explain all these things. But unless you understand, that's why I said, normally the Arahant and the Bodhisattva, they won't argue over this. They will know what this thing is. But the one who bring up for discussion and argument are the non-Arahant and the non-Bodhisattva. So these two, they like to argue because they take what they call their own label as something that they already commit to. They think they are Mahayana. The other one think they are Theravada. So they want to defend Theravada. You say something about the Arahant or the Theravada, still have selfishness, they want to argue or they want to make it right. Then the Mahayana, because the teaching all along teach in this way, except they use the word which is inappropriate. To me, it was translated wrongly as selfishness. It's not selfishness. Actually, it's like they don't have that heart to come for the living being. So, zi du, I think you know Mandarin, right? Zi du, you know what zi du or not?
Yes, 自度他.
Means your own enlightenment. Whereas the bodhisattva, they come for the living being. They I don't know what the other word. They
度他
I think not only to 度他 that they come for the living being. 度众生 So
yeah.
In that sense, they say they have certain type of actually that word is not selfish. In Mandarin is I forgot what they use. You go and read, maybe you can help bring out the Mandarin word, which is more appropriate. It's from that word 自度, to kaki and to others. Because they say the bodhisattva not only realize self-enlightenment, but they also have this vow to have the real universal love and compassion to bring across the limitless living beings and take them all across. So that vow is to actually cultivate until they have that wisdom to do that job, to actually save the limitless living being and take them all across. So it's not about self-enlightenment anymore. But it's nothing wrong to develop the self-enlightenment. So that part, I think, slowly people will come to understand. Then that topic of like trying to argue and defend each tradition become like no meaning. We don't have to actually do that. We are only people who believe they are Theravada or Mahayana has this problem. But the real thing is, as a cultivator, we are neither Theravada or Mahayana. That's why I always say I started with Theravada. But I never say I'm a Theravada Buddhist. I started with Theravada, yes. Well, I'm an English educator. I'm exposed to that one first. But my path is basically Mahayana. That's why when the time comes, I understand both sides. Then both teaching, no problem. So it's not about the division. It's not about whether it's Mahayana or Theravada or even Vajrayana. It's the truth, the teaching. What we want to realize is the wisdom, the teaching. So the Dhamma is the ultimate truth, the ultimate teaching. So whatever that can teach the truth need not have a label. You need not call it Buddhism or subdivide into Theravada, Mahayana or Vajrayana. Your truth is truth. Truth is tatata. Whatever that explain the way things are is the truth. That is Dhamma. So Dhamma is not monopolized by any teaching or any religion. Like the Buddha said, the Dhamma was there before he arrived. You remember this word, isn't it? The Buddha mentioned. The Dhamma was there before he arrived. He only realized it after he has completed the perfection. Because Dhamma is the whole of the wisdom of the conditioned and the unconditioned. So that is Dhamma. That's why he used the word Sabbe Dhamma Anatta.
Yeah, that's my question coming in.
good. Okay. You continue with your question. Yeah.
Before that, Ratio, like I said just now, so all enlightened ones, whether Arahan or Bodhisattva, they already enlightened, so they are sure how to. They sure know.
They understand all this.
How to not to be deceived by mundane mind.
Correct. Yes.
Not to be deluded by the arising mind. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, that's So they are all not affected by the
not affected anymore.
Yeah, the mundane happening, the thinking mind or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. They call it the normal world of consciousness, whatever consciousness create. So the consciousness can come from mundane mind. That one very gross. God, images, form, the sankhara, everything is very gross.
Yeah.
Whereas the other supramundane mind, it also has consciousness, but the consciousness is pure and non-grasping. Mm. You understand?
Yes.
Ah, the mundane mind one is grasping.
But that's Arahant don't have grasping. Even Bodhisattva,
correct,
enlightened,
correct,
don't have grasping,
correct,
anymore.
So,
yes.
Yes, it's in between. Do you realize? Their mundane mind, that gross one, hasn't collapsed. But because of that wisdom, they are protected. Do you understand? Even with that gross movement inside there, because it has not reached that fineness of pure energy wisdom, that's why it cannot collapse. But it doesn't affect them, because the wisdom that is connected, that panya, enable them not to be deceived by the phenomenal world of consciousness. Means whether it's the gross mundane mind, or for those who go the bodhisattva way, if the mundane mind has collapsed, the supramundane mind that arise through pure awareness can still have the non-grasping aggregate, they are not deceived anymore. But because there is non-grasping in the supramundane mind, means they are like the Arahant, non-grasping even in the gross mundane mind, even when it has not collapsed. So the Arahant's five aggregate, although gross, haven't collapsed, but because of the wisdom, is also non-grasping. So that is the difference. So they cannot be disturbed, they cannot be deceived, they cannot be deluded, they cannot like be conditioned into
negativity.
Yes. So the only difference is one still have the gross mundane mind that keep on arising and passing away, whereas the other one, really the whole thing collapsed. No more. I can't find anything.
Okay.
Completely, the nature shine forth.
Okay.
The pure awareness come out, and that pure awareness. That's why I was telling my wife, very strange. That few days when it happened, I said, nothing has changed. Everything is the same. But now I can see everything. Because there is no more of this gross mundane mind to cloud that nature. And everything becomes so pristine, so bright, so clear. And everything is as it is or not. So that type of seeing will give rise to the type of wisdom and the understanding that is way beyond the one that hasn't collapsed. That's why if you stay at the Arahant way, that wisdom is limited. That's why it cannot lead to the perfection of wisdom. But they already have the wisdom to root out avijja. That one is very, very true. And that one is also stated in the Mahayana teaching.
That's why all these are just different spiritual goal.
Different spiritual goal
of individuals. Yeah.
Correct.
Whether they want to walk the path of Bodhisattva or Arahant.
They use the word, the choice is up to them.
Because
there is a choice.
For Arahant or Bodhisattva,
they
understand truly.
Yes.
There's nobody to be saved.
Yeah.
There are nobody enlightened.
That's why the ultimate one is there is no one to count.
To be saved. Yes. And to be saved or to be enlightened also.
Yes. All those things doesn't exist. But the Bodhisattva, because they have both sides wisdom, they know. But to come back, you need a form of mind. So that's why they make that vow. And to them, they know the living being, they are as real as they can be, except they are dependent originating. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. So they know, and this one is not real. But you need to have this, the wisdom of the unconditioned and the conditioned world, to actually have the understanding to come back as a bodhisattva. That's why they need the vow to bring forth the causes and condition for that pure, we call it the pure rebirth consciousness, which is not conditioned by avijja. So without that vow, you vow out of love and compassion to take across the limitless living being in this entire existence, there is no condition for the pure mind to arise. Now that is still a mind, but it's a pure mind without avijja, without the evil root. That's why this one can arise because you have that vow. Then this one also part of the karmic nature, that bodhisattva that take this vow and go forth has a karmic nature. So the karmic nature can manifest a form and mind, but it don't have a consciousness which is born of the usual ignorant avijja paccaya sankhara. So he has to have this understanding. That's why all the four basic vow of a bodhisattva is the same. That's why all this vow has its reason why you must have them to arise the causes and conditions for you to walk this way. But they know no being to be saved. That's why the sixth patriarch say no mark, no mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of others, no mark of life, no mark of Dhamma. This is the ultimate wisdom of the unconditioned. Then with this, you come over to the conditioned world to manifest as a bodhisattva or as a living being. When you come again, you have that wisdom to protect you. You know this is not real. That's why it's anicchang dukkang anatta. He know you, he know me. But you also know there is a law of karma. That's why you will know how to manifest. That's the reason why I always warn you all, don't ever apply the one-sided wisdom to the existential world wisdom, because it doesn't apply that way. The existent world, you like it or not, even though it's anicchang dukkang anatta, there is still a reality. I use the word in inverted comma, reality. You like it or not, there is such thing as life. There is such thing as existence. There is such thing as law of karma. There is such thing as relationship. That's why this part make the Dhamma very difficult to comprehend. Very, very difficult to comprehend. Because without the wisdom of both sides, the unconditioned and the conditioned world, you cannot walk this way. You cannot actually develop the understanding. That's why it's very difficult. So if you look at all the teaching, even now, the Theravada and the Mahayana, you will be surprised. What I have shared with you on this part is not in both the teaching. Not described at all. Not even written. You go and check. If you can find and rejoice, then you read it to me. This understanding, very few people understand. Only the real cultivator, they have the understanding. So this part is beautiful. You create the condition for me to explain again.
Yeah, but still one more thing is the 自度度他, yeah. Huh?
Ah, yes.
Both Arahant and awakened Bodhisattva, they must have already self-awakened. I mean, already enlightenment.
Correct.
Before they 自度, already self-liberated, they can't help to liberate others.
Correct.
So, yeah.
That's why, like the Buddha, actually mentioned in the Salika Sutta. You remember Salika Sutta? The 84 type. They break the defilement into, I think, 80 over time. Then there was one part the Buddha did mention. If you yourself are not out of the Kwamaya, can you save people who are stuck in the Kwamaya? That part is in that Sutta, Salika Sutta. So he said, you must liberate yourself first.
Yeah.
Then only you can give a helping hand and liberate others. So that is the meaning. And you are right. So, zutu means you must realize the enlightenment first. Then only you can do the job.
Yes.
So that is the correct understanding. Because if you don't have that awakening, you cannot. But what the bodhisattva do is, you see, just now in the green book when I read, I explained this, but very few people understand. that if you are not paying attention, you may also miss. So I said, if you have the good condition or parami to go this way, the bodhisattva way, chances is during your cultivation, before you even realize the sainthood way or what, you will have kayamita or teacher or guide who has already gone this way and explained to you.
Yeah, I heard this.
Ah, you heard this, huh? Then what happened is there are also cases where cultivator who didn't have this condition during the Buddha's time, Sakyamuni, I heard from one of my teachers. He said they realized arahantship, then later on that stillness energy has become so still, they can't pull out that vow, the four basic vow. It's too still already. So they can't go that way, Because during that time, they also have these great beings who tell them about the way. Because a lot of the Buddha's chief disciple and very close disciple, the great being, they are also there during that time. So when they know about that, they can't pull out. Then they actually, they are in tears, but not sadness, not the type of sadness tears. In tears that they cannot go this way because they didn't do it before. That's why I told a lot of Kayamita that vow, the Bodhisattva vow, the yellow sheet that I pass on to you all, that I impart my understanding because Maitreya want me to impart this one. You must start early. Don't worry whether you are already a sainthood or arahant or whatever. Even before that, you should do it. That's why I always use the word later on. If you have to come or you choose to come, have to come means you cannot decide, means you are not stable to actually decide when to come. So you have to come. But the choose to come one, there are many stages. Initially, the vow will actually condition you to come only, but you cannot make the choice of the timing, who your parent is, and all those things. This one take a while. But you have already fulfilled the first Bodhi mind development. Means you have planted the Bodhi seed to arise the first stage of Bodhi mind. Means to take the vow sincerely with the faith and you determine with perseverance and you invoke power of merit. So once that one is planted, means the bodhisattva way has already nurtured. And then it will have its causes and conditions, the condition rebirth. Not through avijja. But before this thing stabilize, actually you cannot become an arahant before this. But that life, even you become arahant already, you make this vow, and if it continue and become very strong, then the bodhisattva way is there. You understand? But if when you become the arahant, that life, then you didn't make this vow, then it ceases, the way is finished. Means you just realize the sainthood way leading to arahantship, finished.
Even as arahana, no more coming back.
Yes.
Before their parinibbana, they still can go out and save the beings before they die, you see. So like those 60 arahant was sent up to a different direction by Buddha to
share the Dhamma.
There's a way of saving other beings also. Yeah.
Correct. But they only teach the sainthood way. They don't teach the bodhisattva way. Because like I say, during that time, the urgency is to create more sin, those that have the ability to realize this Dhamma, so that they can have the condition to become enlightened, to become finally arahant. It's just like you want to go university. You must have a lot of Form 5 or Form 6 students to go and take the test and exam. Then maybe not all will go in. certain percentage will go in. Then out of those certain percentage, maybe most of them will graduate. Well, our system is hardly any failure one.
But actually, I want to say, 自度度他 also happened in arahantship. The arahant themselves already realized they also do ta by teaching the Dhamma. And then Bodhisattva is the same, 自度度他.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. But they only teach you to realize the same way leading to arahantship. That's it. So, in that sense, they also say living being. But that capacity is limited. Well, once you yourself become arahant, you cease, actually the whole thing gone. And then the one day, two also same. But for the Sakyamuni's case, I think what he needs is to create affinity for all these beings that has affinity with him, so that most of them develop the wisdom of the sainthood way, and actually many of them become arahant during that life. Now, most of these arahant that time, they already have the vow. They already know this bodhisattva way. So when the Sammasambuddha Buddha come, you look at the Maya Sutta, there is a lot of bodhisattva, maha bodhisattva, and this great being together with the arahant and all things. They were together with him, listening to him and all those things. So those are the scenario and the condition behind. The Sakyamuni, when he chose to realize that Sammasambuddhahood, it so happened it is during the era 2600 over years ago. So a lot of things were not developed yet. So the sainthood way is more urgent, the urgency and all those things. So there is a lot of reason why he chose it that timing and that way, because it was already predicted long ago, and that time they believe that is the thing that they have already developed as the best option. But like we on hindsight, we say, wow, if he has come 2000 over years later when technology, everything is developed, then this teaching will stay very long. But it is not for us to say, because all these are the prediction and the condition, and all those that bring about this is already set. So you cannot. So because of what happened during his coming, 2600, you look back, it's actually a blessing in this guy, because his teaching will preserve actually through chanting and all those things. Then it evolved this way. Then now civilization more evolved. Take for example, let's say he come now. You think how many are interested in philosophy, Dhamma, and his teaching? It may not have that same impact and all those things. So he may not have that condition to manifest according to his what they call karmic conditioning, born into a Sakya family, he don't have. So it is not for us to comment if he has come. The word if is not a reality. So whatever that happened is the reality. So when I look back, I realize it's a blessing in disguise. His teaching were there. It was all fairly well preserved. And I like the Mahayana chanting, because this Pali word, the chanting, they are very authentic. Very authentic. So like this time when I come, I realize a lot of the Mahayana teaching has actually run. Not as authentic as the original teaching. But they have their sutta which are very good. The Great Being Sutta. That one is authentic. But when it comes to the like the Theravada type of foundation teaching of the essential Dhamma, even the three turning, it run a little bit. So these are the difference that I saw. Then I now understand why he come during that time. Actually, it benefited many other people. Like my nature, I know how to filter and screen and take the essence. For me, it's no different. For me, I like it that way. That's why the condition that I choose to be English educator and also with this type of parent, and for me to come with the English understanding to actually help the English speaking mainly Theravada tradition, is because it's part of my condition and my aspiration and vow.
Yeah, Sadhu, right? Yeah. 6 o'clock already.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you got another question. Huh?
Do we have time actually?
Can. I will turn off
fellowship.
Fellowship.
My question is on this Sabbe Sankhara Anichang, Sabbe Sankhara Dukkang, Sabbe Dhamma Anatati. Okay. Sabbe Sankhara Anichang and Dukkang is okay.
Very easy to understand.
I'd like to ask this Sabbe Dhamma Anatati. What I contemplated is because Dhamma, like you tell us, is both conditioned and unconditioned Dhamma. Unconditioned Dhamma is anatta.
Yes.
So unconditioned Dhamma like Nibbana is also anatta.
Let me finish first, then I explain.
But Nibbana is all the while being told, we are all told that Nibbana, so that's why Sabbe Dhamma cannot be Dukkang or Anicchang, because Nibbana is Paramang Sukkang and Nibbana is permanent. Nibbana is permanent. Nichang.
It's the unconditioned.
It's the unconditioned.
You cannot define it as impermanent. But you can say it's permanent in the sense that without condition, it's sure permanent. But permanent not in the sense that it exists forever. Understand now? Because Nibbana is that moment the form and mind go through, cease, then after that if it come out or it parinibbana, it's no more. So if you say it's permanent in the sense that it exists forever, no, it's not correct.
Mm.
But if you say it's impermanent, no, well, it's unconditioned.
Yes. That's why Nibbana is
very difficult to comprehend type of understand. So, that wisdom within there is very different. This is an unconditioned wisdom.
But Nibbana is definitely not Dukkang lah. There's no one to realize
Nibbana. No one. It's the form and mind that realize itself and sees. That's why there is no being inside there. That's why
question is unconditioned Dhamma.
Yes.
Dhamma consists of both conditioned and unconditioned.
Yes.
So Nibbana is unconditioned. Is there other thing other than Nibbana? As it is unconditioned other than Nibbana. Anything else? And then because unconditioned means no cause, no effect, no birth, death.
I explain it this way, which I explained before, then you will understand better.
One more question about
Theo.
What is unconditioned?
You said, listen, the Buddha actually explained the unconditioned. He said, if there doesn't exist the unconditioned, then the escape from the conditioned world is impossible. This one you heard, isn't it?
Understand.
That's why there is such a thing as the unconditioned, which is the realization of Nibbana. But he never said Nibbana is eternal. You understand? Because Nibbana is just a cessation. Then, like I used to explain to you all, this unconditioned, our true mind, our true nature, or you can say the oneness nature or whatever, this one is not a being. It cannot come out and live life. Do you recall? So because it's not a being, it cannot come out to live life, that's why it is anatta. That one also anatta. But the Hindu believe in the Atman. They say this is the ultimate self. the higher self, the higher self and all that. So that one is a different understanding that they believe that way. But the Buddha make it very clear that the realization of the unconditioned means you cannot talk about it. That is beyond thought, beyond mind. There is no word, no concept. You can say it's nothing. Originally, there is nothing. But whatever word you use is wrong, because that thing cannot be described, the Buddha said. Can you follow?
Yes.
So that is the beauty of sabbe dhamma anatta. Even the unconditioned dhamma is still anatta, because he called it the sankata dhamma and the asankata. The Pali word is sankata and asankata dhamma. You heard of these two words?
Yes, yes.
So that is its meaning, but very few people understand. Yet they still believe there is somebody who realized Nibbana. That's why he become Arahant. But the Arahant pertain to the form and mind. This one, hardly anybody talk about it, write about it.
They sankata dhamma is conditioned dhamma. Asankata dhamma is unconditioned. So the true mind or true nature is also unconditioned. But is it a nibbana? It's not, right?
No. Because this is the first thing that come out. You remember I told you? The four circle?
Yeah.
From the source, the first thing to come out is the pure awareness. You remember?
Yeah.
That pure awareness is our pure awareness nature.
True mind, true nature.
But this one is not the oneness. Do you understand?
Oneness is the Nibbana, the source.
The source.
Okay.
The final realization of Nibbana.
Yeah, now
luckily you asked. Otherwise, you all still didn't get that thing.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't get, because I contemplate on this, but I got stuck on this, so I said I must ask you this.
Yeah, you must ask. That's why I always say, while my form and mind is still around, whatever you want to know, you better ask. If I cannot understand beyond me, I will tell you. But if I can understand, I will explain to you. So make full use of the condition when my nature still have a form and mind to actually share and communicate.
Even supra mundane or spiritual realm is unconditioned, right?
The supra-mundane is actually beyond the mundane mind. But because that Bodhisattva, that great being, or the Buddha, or like beings like Hui Ning and all those things, they don't have the mundane mind. So this supra-mundane mind will arise. Actually, the supra-mundane mind is our pure awareness, that true mind, that nature come out. Then there is no more mundane mind to cloud it. Because that mundane mind that the human being born with, it's very gross, very gross. The sankhara, the images that they create, and the emotion and all those things, it's very gross one. The vibration, very gross one. That's why finally it collapses. Then when it collapses, the true nature shine forth, the awareness nature shine forth. Then the awareness nature is like no mind inside there. Then that one is the one responsible for the creation of the mundane thinking. You remember?
Yeah.
How amazing is it that all Dharma come from that nature? So what Hui Ning has understood is his supra-mundane mind, the pure awareness nature, can also create the aggregate of mind. But that one is non-grasping, and that one is without the gross mundane mind. That's why he understands. He know how to use it. Otherwise, he is always with the unconditioned and with that nature. He don't have a mundane mind. That's why he cannot understand people go through all the suffering, the emotion. If for him, he cannot. He already understand there must be no dwelling. Yet the moment he is born, when he heard the Diamond Sutta, the mind must have no dwelling, he realized his mind already without dwelling. That is without the mundane mind. It doesn't stay anywhere. That nature already there. That's why he is different. And his nature is very different. can come with the form and mind without the mundane mind. I think he is the first one I have ever come across.
Sadhu. Sadhu, right there. Thank you very much.
Sadhu for all the condition. For
1 hour.
Yeah, very good. So let us rejoice. Sadhu. 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 Okay, so we will share merit, transfer merit, then we will end. So now today, no fellowship. We will end straight away. So we will now proceed with the sharing of merits. Akka Satta Chibumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakkantu Lokasasana Itta Wata Jamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sapasampati Siddhiya Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Devo wasadu kalena sasa sampati hetu ca. Vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko Itmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo Sattang samagamo otu yava nivana patiya Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so we end. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Radio. Sorry for taking up so much time.
No,
Kalyamita, no chance to
no
ask or share
fact,
their
Dhamma. They are very happy to hear this. We are, a lot will be interested in today's sharing. Today's sharing is very important.
Yeah,
this
thank
understanding
you,
is very profound and very few people can understand. But that time when I share this, it was in the year 2014, 7 years ago. And that time, not many.
More than 7 years, 2014. Okay.
7 years.
Yeah.
Not seven.
Yeah.
So not many people can understand. That's why I want to review all this transcript book is because not many people really go and read it, except for the diligent cultivator like you all. Maybe you all listen and listen, Alicia also. Only these people really benefited, because a lot of others, they don't really understand the profoundness of the sharing at that time, the teaching, where they were not in the capacity to understand and their condition not ready. So now I realize after the last few years, after we introduced the Bodhisattva way and the sharing of the Heart Sutta, I would say the Kayanamita force has actually transformed. And now more and more Kayanamita has progressed and they can understand. And now this teaching starts to have great meaning. And when they surface, it is very different. So my nature knows I have to go through this. Then I don't know how I just forget about the Mahayana Sutta. I go into this straight away. We are still at the Wuliang Yi Qing. So instead of continuing with another Mahayana Sutta, I was thinking the transcript book is more important. It's like the Unicode. After you bring out, then the Unicode when we share, a lot of people understand better. Otherwise, what is the true Maya? They really cannot understand. You realize what I mean?
That one I'm not sure. Because they don't share with me, they share with you only.
Yeah, not everybody like you can okay, appreciate the unique code. Really, a lot of people cannot appreciate. Maybe Miss Lee can. Then there are a few. But they don't know how profound the thing is until the book comes out. Then without the explanation, it's actually not easy for people to understand what that tumor is. That we have two minds. Sing Wei Kenpana through the Six Patriarch Sutta, all this thing. All this teaching is in the transcript book, but very few people go and read. And I don't think many people understand. Okay.
One more observation.
Ken.
After Chinese New Year 2021 this year, I observed that Varatil start using the word we, W-E. Instead of you or I, we and they.
Yeah. Sadhu to you, you were very observant. Sadhu.
Okay, thank you. Sadhu. Have a good dinner, right?
Yeah. So, good night. So, let us end the whole Zoom. Thank you so much.
Sadhu, Sister Ingvi.
Yeah, for sure.
Very good sharing.
Yeah, very good.
Very enjoyable. Yes.
You will like it.
I like it. I find very joyful.
You can follow.
Yes. Actually, Brother Teo, I also wanted to say something, but never mind because I want
to say everything. Continue. Otherwise,
no, it's okay.
Five minutes.
I attended this virtual retreat. Dharma talk this Dharma talk is all by all the Longpo and the Sangha members. Their Dharma talk very interesting in the sense that they talk about the five daily contemplation. All the practical aspect of daily mindfulness, which is very useful. Then at the end of the last day, radio, I listen now. About the Nibbana, he's talking about the Nibbana, you know. I'm not comparing anything, but based on understanding of Nibbana and from Brother Teo's talk so far, based on my experience, actually, it cannot be described, you know. There's no word to describe it.
But there is no consciousness, nothing at all.
Yes. That is my Nibbana, you know. And then when Sister Ingvi asked about Nibbana, permanent or not, blah, 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 that kind of thing, then I was thinking, wow, so profound, huh? This is a very interesting topic.
Yeah, a lot of people cannot understand. That's why they keep on using the mundane mind to understand. That's why they analyze. Then they reason. Then they want to use word to describe. But like the Buddha say, the unconditioned is beyond words. There is no mind inside there. It's the unconditioned. Yes. No condition at all.
Yes. Nothing to can describe it. It cannot be described, you know.
Yes.
It cannot be described. It's not impermanent. It's not anything, you know.
Yeah. There's another one thing I want to repeat. Even the pure awareness also cease. You remember?
Yes. That's what I know.
I told Indy they all last time that pure awareness is the first thing that manifests from that nature.
Correct.
This one come with the form and mind. That's how you can connect to that, that pure awareness return to the true nature. But this thing during Nibbana, even the pure awareness also cease. So when the pure awareness also sees, there is no one inside there to be aware.
Yes, correct. Sadhu. But that is exactly the experience I talked to you about it. The pure awareness, the heartbeat gone, followed by the awareness.
When you go in and you realize that, you will understand what I say.
Yes.
Completely.
Correct.
But when the form in mind
completely different from what people say, you know.
Yes. Because they haven't realized this, that's why they cannot explain. And the stability not there also. Most of them has a glimpse. But what is important is when the consciousness come back, the five degree of form in mind, it's not time for parinibbana yet. So this five degree of form in mind will come back. So when it come back, because we have the mindfulness, the stability of the awareness, this nature can observe and see and understand how creation starts. That's like how from the source, that first pure
awareness that comes
come
in
out.
First, you know.
No, that's
yeah, then after that,
your consciousness
yes.
come out. Then the karmic nature with its life force appear. Then that consciousness that come back with its life force appear split into three area of consciousness. The forehead, the heart, and the Dantian. Then how all this anime and the brain start again? You will see all this. You will see all this. That's why I say the Nibbana, when it sees, the brain also completely stop. No activity, nothing at all. Like a dynamo didn't even run. The whole thing still, but you didn't die. The stillness, the unconditioned, everything is there. The pure nature. But you didn't die. That's why the real Nibbana, unless that form and mind go through, they cannot understand. Those who go through and experience a glimpse, they also cannot understand. But the one that went through the cessation for a while, they can understand. Yeah. So very good. Po Cheng, sadhu to you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Varantio is so very beautiful. You know,
yeah,
when you talk about it, then
I
can relate it. And it's so beautiful, the explanation of Varantio.
So
it's just cannot be described, but you know, I don't know why the people describe it in so beautifully. The Dhamma is so beautiful, but this is not what I experienced though, you know what I mean?
It's completely different. That's why I say when you have the real understanding and you listen, a lot of the Dhamma that they speak, the word may be the same, but the understanding of it is not there one. You will know one. Then like yesterday, Chin Hao do the short video, the true cultivation, which is not Dhamma knowledge. You should listen to that one, then you will understand what I mean. Because even Suji, that book, the Sutra in Numerous Meaning, he just described the final outcome, but he didn't teach you how to realize the wisdom to realize that process. It's not taught. The Avijja Sutta, the tense, that all these are not taught. That's why it sounds like ultimately it's so beautiful, the Dhamma. But how to do it, I haven't seen any book really describe and share the whole understanding and process. It's not there. Even the unconditioned, the condition, the five aggregate, I haven't read anywhere. That's why I told him, if you can find, you let me know. I will rejoice. Nobody.
Brother Tio, I rejoice. Yes, I heard that video that the Brother Chinna came up with yesterday. I also attended that talk also, yes. It is a very beautiful Dhamma. Just like I said, you know, a lot of Dhamma is so beautiful. Some of it doesn't as describe the cultivation as detailed as Brother Tio, you know. That's why this nature can progress, you know, because of your detailed cultivation. Can progress, you know, Brother Tio. Sadhu to you. Maha sadhu. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
That is a difference. That is a difference.
Yeah,
but the Dhamma talk is very beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not saying that totally I learned nothing, but actually I learned quite a lot of things also. Some of the cultivation that is very useful for my daily mindfulness cultivation, which I appreciate very much, you know. But when it comes to the Dhimana, Nibbana part, I say how come it's quite different, you know. So I so don't understand.
Maybe
it's an analogy that they give, you know, the analogy that they
Correct.
Give. But the analogy they do can be very misleading also, like in the sense
Correct.
That you create a false impression to other people, you know.
Also,
Correct.
Some of them, they actually read out from somewhere on. Then they share what they read, then what they believe. Because unless you really go through that cessation and the whole cultivation, you can never understand what Nibbana is.
Correct.
And this is the topic very few people comprehend or have the understanding.
But I got one question regarding this Nibbana.
Yes.
In the Nibbana, right, you cannot control how long you stay inside.
Cannot.
So,
cannot.
So when you experience it a few times, let's say I have Brother Theo, you experience it a few times.
Yeah.
So each time your experience will be different length, is it?
Different. But initially, yeah, it will show it to you very clearly, the whole process, until I came out of it, then I saw how the thing is. Then after you have gone through that one, then the future one that come, you will have the understanding already. Then you no need to like first time experience it and all things. So when it goes in, you will know. Then before you go in, also you will know, because the mind must have that type of wisdom that totally negate. Negate means don't try to look for anything. Don't try to expect the cessation to come. Cannot. When there is a mind involved, it can never happen. That's why it is the unconditioned. So I remember the first time I went through is that wisdom was so profound, so deep. I contemplate and reflect until I came to the realization. Think also like that, don't think also like that. No reality. That's why my mind completely free. Then after that, the funny thing happened. That cessation come. Then when it really happened, that process where it go in, where the first time I was fully aware. Then when I come out, it become very clear. At first was the brain there. At first the brain, a lot of activity on. At that time, the mundane mind is still around. Then later on, when that cessation happened, it's like the whole thing shut down. The pure awareness also shut down. That's why it cannot create anything. No thought, nothing. No perception, no aggregate, nothing. All cease. Even the pure awareness also no more. That nature also cease. Then that one is the real nirvana, the unconditioned. And when that thing happened, you cannot describe, you cannot talk about it. Then how it come out also very different. So all this is very beautiful. Okay, Pujang, sadhu, huh?
Yes, sadhu, Bharatiya. For me, Bharatiya, like you said, it's unexpected. I don't even expect this kind of thing happen to me, Bharatiya.
So
it just happened naturally, you know?
Yeah,
it happened naturally.
Condition, it will happen. Otherwise, it cannot happen.
Yes.
When you try to look for it, expect it, it will never happen.
Correct. So for me, it's like unexpected. They're like, the awareness just know, the pure awareness just know, and then after that is the happy gone, the pure awareness gone, you know.
Gone.
Yeah, cease, everything cease.
Yes.
Yeah, then when it comes back, it's like, when it comes back, like I told you, but I still don't know that it's a form of mind, cessation of the form of mind. It's only when I come in again, that I realize, hey, something very interesting happening, very amazing.
Then
only I realize something astonishing, amazing, you know. How it like start up again, like a machine start up again, you know.
How you become alive again.
Yes.
A human being.
Yes.
In fact,
that part is like...
The first instant when the pure awareness come back, there is no word, nothing one. Nothing one.
Yes. Nothing to describe, I know.
Like you cannot manifest yet. You cannot become the poaching yet. Cannot.
Yes.
Everything slowly. Then the whole thing come back. Then you can see the sense data coming in. Then you can see through the awareness how the senses, data, how upon contact. Then you know already. This is how the sankhara start. This is how creations are. Then how your memory, your views, your conditioning, your yoniso manasikara, your dhamma, your understanding. So this is the one that actually brings about wisdom and understanding that counter all this. Otherwise, you can't handle sense experience. That's why the mundane mind, without the Dhamma, without the wisdom, without the yoniso manasikara, the wisdom and the moment of sense experience within your nature, you cannot cope with life. Because everything happens so fast, the senses, the movement, everything happens so fast. So when it comes back, during that time, my nature saw how everything start again. Then I knew how living beings suffer. No wonder they entangle where they don't have the Dhamma, the wisdom, the unisoma, manasikara, the understanding. That's why all these things unfold by itself through that nature's awareness that saw and witnessed the happening. That's why it's the silent mind, that silent nature, witnessing all the things. There are a lot of things that people never understand.
I rejoice the sharing by Brother Teo. Actually, Brother Teo, for you, you have a lot more awareness. For me, it was very, very quiet, no, Brother Teo. I only sense the awareness
You don't have that stability yet, okay? So initially, when you go in the first few times, but you already transformed the understanding there. But if nobody explains, then you don't have that clear understanding of what you hear from my sharing, or say you will understand it faster, deeper, and stable.
Correct.
Easy. Because before that, nobody really experienced that. So how to talk to people? Sometimes may not understand what is all this. How come like that one? Just like when the mundane mind collapse, the super mundane mind come out. My nature has got no doubt, but I was amazed. How come it's like that? Everything is the same. Last time I cannot see, now I can see. Now that nature is so different. But I never doubt. But whatever happened is meant to be. Without that transformation, that's why in my sharing, you can never understand. Without going through all this, you can never understand. You can go and copy what I say, no use on.
Because you
can never understand, you didn't go through. You didn't go through that.
You must experience it to know, because it's very difficult to explain to people this.
Otherwise,
unless you go through it.
Yes. Knowledge is always knowledge. Yes.
But Brother Teo, we are so fortunate to have Brother Teo, directly teaching
also
us,
this,
Your
affinity, all the Kayamita's affinity. Otherwise, this nature doesn't do anything. Because this nature, accord and flow, it manifests according to condition. If there is no affinity and condition, nothing come out. That's why since the year 1989, my nature is ready. But hardly anybody came. Until 2004, when I started the sharing, very few people understand. Then now, after almost 16 years, 17 years, only starts to see the last few years more and more. More and more, which is already very beautiful, very good for the world. Because these are the numbers that we need, the small numbers, but the one that really have the teaching, the understanding, the transformation. And these are the numbers that can actually grow. One become many. So as you all evolve, maybe before the next sasana, all of you all who has progressed would have very beautiful nature. And so that was the condition that my nature come with to share this.
Thank you,
Brother Teo. Thank you. Okay, we better end. Getting very late.
Thank you, Brother Teo.
Okay.
Sadhu.